From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard Magazine. Joining me on the show this week are Hillary Krieger, Enterprise Editor for CNN Digital, and Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor at National Journal. And here are the issues. Hillary Clinton is the new Democratic presidential nominee, the first woman to win a major party presidential nomination. President Obama, after hinting for months that he preferred Clinton over her rival, Senator Bernie Sanders, formally endorsed her. Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee, continued his unorthodox campaign strategy of speaking at rallies and to the media, but running few ads or delivering few formal speeches. His efforts to unify the Republican Party stalled. In Israel, two Palestinians killed four Israelis in a terrorist attack at a Tel Aviv market. An Indian prime minister visited Washington, strengthening ties between the United States and India. Well, let's start with Hillary Clinton. No big surprise that she won the Democratic presidential nomination, although her struggle to get there was harder than we had thought. But Hillary, was her nomination ever really in doubt?
I think that in a way, her nomination was really in doubt about a year and a half ago when she was a very vulnerable candidate. There's a huge progressive part of the country that feels totally disaffected. Just like on the right, you see very many disaffected grassroots voters, people who feel Obama hasn't delivered on what he said that he would, and that Clinton represents the same old establishment, and she's much more centrist than where many grassroots Democratic voters are these days. But nobody emerged who could really take her on. And so the fact that Bernie Sanders was as successful as he was is remarkable because of all the things he doesn't have going for him. I mean, he was an obscure senator. He wasn't even a Democrat. He called himself a Democratic Socialist. He doesn't have your typical presidential trappings. And so I think that it shows that there was a real vulnerability she faced, but nobody in the Democratic Party stepped up to take her on. And when Bernie Sanders was the most ardent adversary, he just didn't have what it takes. So in that sense, it wasn't likely that she was going to be losing this election or nomination process.
Tom, what about it? You'll remember back even before the time when Hillary started to look vulnerable, there was a time maybe 2 years ago when it was thought that the whole Democratic presidential process would be a coronation of Hillary Clinton. It hasn't quite been that, for
no,
sure.
No. I've always thought that she was more or less inevitable, Fred, once Vice President Biden decided not to run, because I think he could have given her a real run for this. But
let's stop there. Why didn't he run? You know, I thought he would have done exactly that, could have been a much stronger opponent than Senator Bernie Sanders.
Well, I think the death of his son, Beau, last year really understandably sent him into an emotional tailspin, and I think he understood that he wasn't ready to do what you need to do. I mean, he is now, I think. He was likely to be a very formidable campaigner for Hillary Clinton in the fall, but he just decided, and I think at the time he was right, that he was not up for the emotional grind of a national campaign. But I think once he decided not to run, barring some health issue, some criminal issue, some issue out of left field, I think Clinton's nomination was essentially inevitable. But you're right, it wasn't easy. It was very rocky. She turns out not to have been a very good campaigner. Mm-hmm. It turns out that she did not get better as she went along. And so we will see now. I mean, some of her partisans are saying, well, now if they have an enormous weight lifted from her shoulders, you'll see the real Hillary. You'll see just how good she can be. And okay. To which I say, let's see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the truth is, I thought she was a better campaigner than a more attractive presidential candidate in 2008 when she ran against Barack Obama than this year running for an open seat.
I totally agree. Mm-hmm. I think that in 2008, being under such pressure, she found her voice. She found an argument to use that really could rally people, which was that she was a fighter and that she didn't give up. And
that, is that an argument or is that a slogan?
Well, slogan, both things, right? Yeah. An argument, I think, is a slogan that appeals to certain people. So, okay. But she had a rallying cry that a certain part of the population, white working class voters, of course, there was a racial issue as well when you had Barack Obama as her competitor. But she was able to make a case to them and get a constituency. And that's why she was able to stay in that race in 2008 so long. This year, she didn't even, those people were the people she was struggling with. She wasn't even able to continue, you know, her appeal to that constituency. And there wasn't a message, I can't tell you, you know, a slogan that she had until now.
Yeah, my can't either, come to think of it.
So, it was a puzzle. It really seemed throughout that she had not learned the lessons of 2008. And it was really only because, in my sense of things, that the Democrats hadn't found a more formidable opponent, that she was able to get away with that and still get the nomination.
You know, we won't know for sure where the race will settle until after the two-party conventions in July. On the other hand, it does look like Hillary Clinton as the nominee, and of course Donald Trump is already the presumptive Republican nominee. With those two candidates, it looks like she is a little bit ahead. And I would say is not a prohibitive favorite, but really is, let's put it this way, she's a slight favorite in the race.
Right. The most recent Fox News poll, and I should say Fox News has got reliable pollsters, but they're always there's a little bit of sentiment towards Republicans, not a lot, but some. But even the latest Fox News poll shows her 3 points ahead of Donald Trump. And that is
Rasmussen has her ahead by four.
Right. And, and that is before the events of recent days where Hillary has locked it up and where, as I'm sure we're going to talk about, Mr. Trump has
not had
the best week of his campaign. So there's no doubt that at the moment, she's ahead. But, you know, how many times have you heard me say it? Overnight is a lifetime in politics. Well, we've got 5 months' worth of lifetimes here between now and the election. And we've got conventions and we've got three presidential debates in September, October. But at the moment, she is, without a doubt, she's ahead.
Do you agree, Hillary?
I do agree. I mean, the polls actually, those numbers are, you know, close, if not in the margin of error. So, but the polls haven't been the greatest indicator anyway. The California primary was supposed to be very close between her and Bernie Sanders. So that proved to be wrong.
She won.
By a significant margin. It wasn't the close race that had been predicted. So, you know, I think from what data is available, but also if you look at the constituencies that, you know, she, sort of the natural constituencies, the look of the map right now, Donald Trump has brought in new voters, people who haven't always been Republican, but they tend to be less educated. There's a limit to that amount of the population. He's also said a lot of things that alienate a lot of Latinos. The Latino vote, if people who are Latino come out and vote for Hillary Clinton, you know, that can be a total game changer. Now, so far, they haven't done that. That hasn't been a constituency that's been politically active in representation of its numbers. But she has those types of advantages. She has more different constituencies that she, you know, has the potential, at least in the way the issues and rhetoric has played out, to really make inroads in.
Yeah, I think that other people have said that in a different way than you, Hillary, but have said, and maybe you're saying the same thing, that she has more avenues toward winning than Donald Trump does. In other words, if she loses this state, well, she can probably win this state and make up for it. And that's why I think she looks like she's in a pretty good position. Well, let's turn to Donald Trump. Donald Trump had an opportunity to jump on three issues over the last week, week and a half, maybe 2 weeks. One of them was the Inspector General's report on Hillary Clinton's use of a private email system when she was Secretary of State. Very critical report. Another was a bad jobs number about the economy that came out. The economy, which whether she likes it or not, with a Democratic president, Barack Obama, will have some effect on her campaign. And the third thing was a foreign policy speech, pretty effective one, that she gave attacking Donald Trump, and he didn't respond to any of those, but a brief and ineffective way. It's hard to understand why he didn't.
Well, I think we know a lot of things about Mr. Trump, and one of them is that he reacts very vigorously and viscerally to criticism. I mean, he
so do a lot of people.
He's not a shrug your shoulders kind of politician. And so you're exactly right, Fred. The most recent jobs report was very, very anemic. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Obama administration has created more private sector jobs in every month for all but the first handful of months of his presidency, but the most recent number showed that 38,000 new jobs were created, which was anemic, really anemic, and almost 100,000 fewer than the previous month. And this should have been a tailor-made issue for Trump to jump on. And so far, he's had one tweet about this, and that was it. I mean, it's always dangerous when a campaign is about you in a given week. In the last week or so, it's been all about him, and the news has not been been good. And so he has, I agree with you, he's lost a, for the moment at least, he's lost an opportunity to really to beat up Hillary Clinton, and he's not taken it so far.
Yeah,
he's been an amazing candidate so far, but not over the last couple weeks.
Well, it's also interesting that over the weekend, he also sort of took a major issue off the table for Republicans, which is Libya, because this is a, you know, a place where Hillary Clinton, as then as Secretary of State, was very assertive in arguing for Gaddafi to be removed. There's chaos, terror groups springing up right and left in that region. And of course, the Benghazi episode, which has been, you know, hugely controversial, and the investigation of that by Republicans is what led to the discovery of her email server, which has caused her the biggest political headaches of this campaign. And over the weekend, he basically said it was the right thing to remove Gaddafi, that, you know, he should have been taken out. And that's the position of the Obama administration. That's what led to this chain of events. So when it comes to the sort of traditional ammunition that the Republican Party uses, he seems to not be interested in engaging that way.
All right. We'll have more in just a minute. First, a reminder that you're listening to Issues in the News, coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me today are Tom DeFrank of National Journal and Hillary Krieger of CNN Politics. And this is a reminder that you can listen to Issues online as a podcast. The program is also available for free download on iTunes. Just click it on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/archive/issuesinthenews. In other words, there are lots of ways that you can listen to this show. I interrupted you, Hillary, when you were, because I had to go to a break, but you were in the middle of a thought.
What I just wanted to say about Trump is that, you know, we were just talking about all the ways in which he lost opportunities. There were moments that seemed to really he could capitalize on, that Republicans would capitalize on. He didn't take them, and that seems head-scratching. But I just wanted to, note and emphasize that Donald Trump has not played by the rule book this entire campaign, and that is why he is the nominee right now. And so to assume that anything should be done the way we have seen it, I think is a mistake. We don't know. It certainly, the way he's done things has helped him with Republican base. We don't know if it'll work for the general election, but it could, and it might be the right move to continue to do it the way he wants to do it.
Well, he appears likely to be go ahead and do that. You know, this has alarmed, Tom, as you know, a lot of Republicans who don't like him. And in fact, since he's had a kind of a rough last couple of weeks, it sort of reignited this notion that we have to get somebody to step in at the convention and stop him from being president. I mean, look, it sounds far-fetched, but the idea from a group called the Never Trump Group, including many people, at least conservative journalism that you and I know well, they really seem to be revived in their efforts. And, you know, there was an interesting interview with James Baker, the former Secretary of State, Treasury Secretary, and White House Chief of Staff. He's now 86. He was questioned by Lionel Barber of the Financial Times, and he was asked about Trump, and here's what he said. He said, "I won't get my panties in a wedge because of what I'm hearing from the political candidates. What they say in the campaign and what they do once they are in the White House are not the same thing. I don't care who wins. Whoever gets to the White House, the presidents can do a lot, but they can only do so much through the system of checks and balances. We are a country of laws limited by bureaucracy and the power structure in Washington. Presidents are not unilateral rulers. If they did not know that, they will find out soon enough. In other words, I think what he's saying is that people are worried a little too much about what Donald Trump might do as president, and for that matter, Hillary Clinton as well.
I think Jim Baker is absolutely right about that, Fred. There are limits, and no matter which of these nominees is the next president, he or she will have real limits. Every president comes in and realizes pretty quickly that the wish list has to be dialed back because, for a variety of reasons, there's not the political support. Now, if Trump wins and the Republicans control both houses of Congress, then he's going to be able to do more than he might otherwise be able to do. Same with Hillary Clinton, although I don't think if she wins, I don't think both the House and the Senate will become Democratic. So with split, divided government, you're never going to be able to have the votes to do everything you would like to do.
But Trump, don't you think Trump has a problem with the Republicans even, because they are, most of the Republicans in Congress are traditional conservatives, and he's not that.
Right. So I definitely agree that there's a limit on what he can do in terms of a legislative agenda, in terms, the things with, he said about foreign policy, there's an entire Pentagon bureaucracy that's very committed to a certain mindset about how you deal with the military. There are a lot of reasons that he could be checked. But I have to say, I totally disagree with what Jim Baker said. Mm-hmm. I think the idea, if he actually believed that it doesn't matter who's in charge, he shouldn't be in politics.
I've looked at that too. He wasn't saying that he doesn't literally care who's elected. He's saying, I don't care who wins, whoever that is can't do this or that. Clearly Jim Baker is.
I think what he's saying is dangerous. I think the idea that because the structure of the United States is such that there are a lot of different power centers because of the brilliance of the way the country was set up, that means that we don't need to be concerned when people are pushing against those power structures. I think, his statement assumes that we are so secure in the way we are set up that there's no threat if you have somebody who doesn't buy into those systems coming in to be the most powerful person in the world. And there is a lot of discontent in America right now. There is total gridlock in Congress. You don't have to go to the divisions within the Republican Party to get that far. And I think it's a mistake to think that when there are really serious questions about a person's agenda and the type of leader they would be and how they view the democratic system, that we can assume, okay, it's fine because our system is so great that it will, balance out whoever we have as a leader.
Well, that's a great dissent. I don't know. I kind of agree with Baker, but you, Hillary, you made a very good point. We're going to turn to the visit of the Indian Prime Minister Modi, and he is a huge figure in the world as India emerges as a country that doesn't want to be just a country that affects the balance of power as it did to some extent during the Cold War, but wants to be a major international player. The Foreign Policy Initiative, Tom, said this, that his visit was another step forward in the growing strategic and economic ties between India and the United States, and I would add military ties.
I think the Pentagon has already said that they would love to do more joint exercises with the Indian Navy, feeling like that would be very useful in that part of the world. Clearly, Obama and Modi seem to get along very well. A couple years ago, President Obama was invited to be the chief visitor, whatever you want to call it, at India's National Day. Previous individuals have included people like Vladimir Putin. And so the two of them get along. They seem to speak the same language of technology and other things. And, India is the world's largest democracy. And I think it makes sense as a matter of foreign policy for the U.S. to engage India more, and I think they will continue to do so. So it makes a lot of sense strategically for this relationship to be enhanced in the Obama administration, and I suspect whichever administration succeeds the Obama administration will pursue a similar policy.
Mm-hmm. Hillary, Tom and I are older than you are, so I think remember more India's role during the Cold War, when India was at least professed to be non-aligned but actually tilted toward supporting the Soviet Union. We're a long ways away from that.
Right. I think in some ways this is sort of the capstone of the transition, the strategic decision India made that their future was not to be a sort of anti-colonialist state, that that wasn't their destiny as a nation. That shouldn't be the overriding principle of how they view the world. Because when you go past that mindset, there are so many natural interests that India and the U.S. share. And in fact, ahead of this meeting, you know, an Obama administration aide was saying that there's more cooperation on more different subjects between the United States and India than any other country, potentially. So it's definitely, I think, you know, Modi has made this sort of final move, and it's opened up an incredibly close and growing, you know, potential for partnership between the U.S. and India.
And let's turn to Israel, where a terrorist attack occurred several days ago in Tel Aviv, and where two Palestinians opened fire at a market and killed four Israelis. There have been so many fewer of these attacks in Israel since they put up that large fence that it came as, at least to me, it came as somewhat a surprise. I'm going to start with you, Hillary. What should I not have been surprised? Let me put it that way.
I know. Having lived in Israel during the Second Intifada and witnessing a lot of these attacks, I feel like it's never a surprise when, sadly, there's a mass, you know, terror attack in Israel. And we have actually seen a lot of a different type of these types of deadly attacks over the past several months, where people have been using knives and much more, you know, weapons that don't kill as many people and are sort of more of an intimate one-on-one encounters.
And but they seem to have more people involved in doing that.
Right, because it's people that maybe aren't connected to official organizations and therefore don't have sophisticated weapons and don't have the ability to plot out a suicide bombing. They're just at a checkpoint and they pull a kitchen knife out and attack a soldier. So you've actually seen these incidents kind of bubbling for several months now. And I think, you know, for the terror organizations, and nobody's claimed responsibility, you know, as of yet, but for terror organizations, they need to justify their existence and say, like, we are the ones that are really leading this cause. And so when you have sort of citizens taking on these sort of small level attacks, it's in a way, you know, it's you can expect that a bigger group, a more violent attack would come next, because those organizations like Hamas want to make sure that they're actually in control of any violence that's going on.
Tom?
You're right, Hillary. Nobody claimed responsibility, but Hamas released a statement congratulating, expressing satisfaction with this. Since last October, about 80 Israelis have been killed in these sorts of attacks, but they had tapered off. I think it's yet again a reminder that places like Gaza just breed terror, and you can't feel good about it. I mean,
what's your take on the new defense minister, who is who comes from the right wing, the political right wing, Hillary, in Israel, and is very controversial?
Yeah, he's very controversial. Avigdor Lieberman, who has his own party, which means Israel our home, and basically mostly represents the Russian constituency, Russian immigrants, who are about 20% of the population of Israel. And he's sort of in the Russian strongman mold. He's actually from Moldova originally. He uses a lot of very incendiary rhetoric. And so the United States has not been a big fan of his. When he was foreign minister, they basically dealt with the defense minister at the time, Ehud Barak, because they didn't want to deal with Avigdor Lieberman. His coming in as defense minister is really a shock to a lot of people in Israel, because he doesn't have a defense background. Israel's security is so important that to take somebody who's a real novice, it's happened before, but you had somebody who was very respected, had a very strong military background, and was pushed out as part of this for the sake of politics. But he also is a pragmatist, and he's looking to reinvent himself, and he's more okay on a two-state solution than some others, so this actually could be an opportunity.
Well, we'll see. That's all the time we have today. Joining us were Hillary Krieger, enterprise editor for CNN Digital, and Tom DeFrank, contributing editor at National Journal. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineers were Mark Ferguson and John Dryden. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Thank you for listening.